So, will Syrian President Bashar Assad, once thought a potential moderating force in the Middle East, be the next dictator to fall? And if so, will Syria go the way of Egypt, with a rough but largely peaceful transition? Or Libya, where the violent ouster of Muammar Gaddafi seems certain but leaves in its wake hundreds of thousands of untrained young rebels with guns? In the past few days, even Syria's strongest allies, Russia, Turkey, Iran, have openly criticized Assad, urging him to stop the violence which the UN says has killed 2,200 people. Today, Syrian forces opened fire on anti-government protesters in several cities, killing at least 7 people. And inside the country, opposition leaders are debating whether they should take up arms. Professor Joshua Landis is director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. He joins us now on the line from KGOU in Norman, Oklahoma. Joshua, Professor, welcome.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And first, to that scenario that we just laid out, I mean, what is the thinking in Syria, this debate that we hear is going on between opposition leaders about whether or not to take up guns?
Well, we've just had the formation of a provisional council based on the Libyan model that came out of a big meeting of opposition members in Istanbul. They named a professor in Paris at the Sorbonne, Burhan Ghaliyoun, as the head of this sort of interim president of this council. Almost immediately, it was denounced by a fellow named Mohamed Rabban, about whom we don't know a lot, but he's the head of a revolutionary committees in Syria. And he said, these people on the outside don't have any connection to us on the inside. They are not running the revolution, and decisions about the revolution have to be made on the inside. And so this, in a sense, this food fight broke out amongst leaders of the Syrian opposition. And that's very disconcerting for people in Washington, people in Europe, and for Syrians themselves, mostly, who are looking for united leadership and what comes next in Syria.
Is this one of the reasons why you say that you don't think the government is as weak as some might think, while the opposition may be weaker than people think?
Yes. You know, analysts in Damascus, a guy named Sami Mubayid, who's a very smart journalist, historian, just wrote an article saying, if you look at it from the point of view of the Syrian government, they feel strong. They feel confident. The army has stuck together. They pacified some major cities where demonstrations broke out, Hama, Homs, Latakia. Now, of course, their whole country, there have been demonstrations in most major cities, except for the big capital cities, and those they've kept under control. But on the suburbs, there have been major demonstrations in Damascus. But if you look at it, who was against them? Against them are young activists, people who are disorganized. They're willing to go out. They're extraordinarily courageous, get shot, demanding freedom and so forth, but they don't have arms. There is a unified Syrian military. Yes, there have been defections on the lower ranks, but there's been no major split at the top. Yeah. And, you know, the presumption on the part of the West is that this process is just going to keep on undermining. It's like termites, for example, in the house. And at some point, the whole thing is just going to collapse. In a sense, like Libya, you know, one day Gaddafi seems strong. The next day, the rebels had broken into Tripoli. And but, you know, we don't know that. Right. The military in Syria is still strong. There is no rebel military. And the opposition, as you say, is beginning to call for the construction of a military option.
Well, and we'll have to wait and see if that happens and what that means. But meanwhile, talk to us about the Sunni-Shia divide in Syria and how that might make this different from other countries in the region, make it, as scholar Vali Nasser writes recently, potentially the end to the hopeful Arab Spring because of this sectarian tension. Now, we know that the army rank and file that you just talked about is mostly Sunni Muslim. But the officer corps, the president, Assad, the ruling elite are from the minority Alawite Shia Muslim sect. So how does that schism impact what's happening? You're saying right now that the largely Sunni army rank and file is so far supporting the minority Shia president.
Yes, they are. You know, this is the opposition is counting on the military, the state structure, the Sunni business elite, because the Sunni elites really run the economy in Syria. They're counting on those people, the Sunnis, to abandon the Alawites and to isolate the minorities within the Ba'ath Party and the president, who is an Alawite, and to somehow run on the other side of the ship. That has not happened. A lot of them have. The revolt is being carried out largely by Sunnis. But much of the country has stayed loyal to the state, or at least they haven't run to the other side of the ship. And that's allowing the government to rule the day on the ground militarily and in terms of the economy and other things. Now, it means Syria is deeply divided. It also means, as you say, in the regional context, that Iran, Hezbollah, but mostly Iran, are going to stick by Syria through thick and thin here. And they are going to spend quite a bit of money to support the regime. So even as Europe and some of the Sunni nations begin to boycott and economically try to isolate and hurt Syria, Iran is going to fund it and try to pick up the slack.
But other friends of the country like Turkey have been very critical. It seems like it's being isolated, at least diplomatically. But just one quick question about the U.S. role in all of this, because we're reminded of our recent history with Syria, the U.S.'s recent history with Syria, as former Vice President Dick Cheney's memoirs come out. There's a scene in the book in which he's meeting with top members of the Bush administration, and Cheney says they ought to bomb a reactor in Syria. And no one raises their hands to agree. What happened here historically? Should, as Dick Cheney, I think, is saying, should the U.S. have been tougher with Assad? Is the U.S. being tough enough now? Or does the U.S. have little to do with the outcome at this point?
Well, you know, I think once we begin looking back on this, we're going to see that President Bush and the people around him, such as Dick Cheney and the neocons, were way too aggressive. They thought that America could just slice and dice in the Middle East and reshape the greater Middle East. This caused a great deal of pushback. And in many ways, the leaders of the Middle East fell into line, many of them did, fell into line, and the people behind them in order to push back at the United States. Since Obama's come to power and sort of tried to withdraw from the Middle East and really was not concerned with Middle Eastern problems so much, even though he said he was. He didn't make a major effort to do anything in the Middle East. This allowed, really, for the people to come out against their governments, fulfilling many of the things that Bush said he was going to do but could never succeed in doing, because it's the people power. And America can't get out too far ahead of the people of the region. We've seen the United States play rather smart diplomacy, I think, in Libya and in the other regions by pushing out but not getting ahead of the local revolutionary movements. And it's going to have to do that in Syria. It can herd it along, but it can't take the leadership.
And now the question is, what will those people do? Professor Joshua Landis, Director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.